In your face. While Melbourne's Queer Midsummer Festival kicks off on the 18th of January, we're joined by the CEO and the creative director, Karen Bryant. Karen, welcome to 3CR.
Hello.
First of all, what an exciting title, the creative director element. That must be amazing.
Yeah, I've worked in sort of the programming area for most of my arts work for over 30 years now, which is a bit frightening. And I really enjoy that part of being able to, you know, work with artists and keep my hand in on what we're doing artistically and creatively.
So you do have some changes, though. I mean, you've got pill testing happening at some of the events. Tell us about that. That was a big announcement.
Yeah, that's actually just at Victoria's Pride. Victoria's Pride is a slightly unique event for us because whereas we sort of run everything else in terms of it being our event from the ground up, Victoria's Pride is a state government event that we produce on behalf of the state government, but we do all the curation and all of those things. And this year it's being used for part of the testing, for pill testing, which, we're really, really pleased about because, you know, everything we do is about our communities and the best for our communities, and that's part of a harm reduction strategy for our communities. And we hope that it's viewed very well by our communities and certainly utilised.
Karen, what is the highlight for you at this year's festival? I mean, there's so much.
There is, because there's over 200 events. So it's always hard for me to pick one at any one time. It's probably good for me to talk a bit about our theme for this year.
Please.
Which is time and place. So the festival has always been partly what's called an open access festival. So anybody in our community can register to run an event, which is fabulous because that gives us that incredible diversity of types of events and community events all across the state. But we also have a curated program as well, and we have a theme and we encourage everyone to try and all the artists, including open access, to respond to that. And time and place, the theme was actually devised before a certain international election result, but I think we could all see the writing on the wall. We could see the empowerment of right wing, of around the world, the global movements to see a lot of the rights of LGBTIQ communities and diverse communities wound back. And at the same time, we wanted to sort of look at what is it to be queer in our part of the world, in Australia, in neighbouring regions, which, of course, in a society where, you know, everything's online, we are so buffeted by the global impacts, but also what is it to be here in Australia and queer? What is it in terms of land, our connection to country? Which is particularly important here in Victoria at the moment with the recent fabulous treaty. And so the theme is very about where we come from, that history of our communities, the pride we have in protest, the pride that we have in the rights we've won, but at the same time not taking that for granted, looking at where we are now and the threats to that, and looking to where we want to be for the future. And there's quite a lot of events throughout the program, particularly in our curated program, that speak to that in a whole lot of different ways and from different parts of our communities. And the other really good part that I'm excited about is all year round we do a lot of work with artists and invest in artists and invest just in their career development, in their project ideas. And so there's quite a lot of projects in this year's festival that also have come about through that development program and our mentorship program. And some of those projects have been in development with us for 2 or 3 years. So it's always really exciting to see that, you know, them finally culminate in a production or a showcase.
What is the biggest change you've seen in the many years that you've been CEO of Midsummer?
Well, it's got a lot bigger. The festival program's actually doubled in size, which is pretty significant. And I think, you know, we're curating and producing more in out of suburban, with a lot more partnerships, a lot more regional work. I mean, there's 14 projects as part of our regional activation program. So I think it's just the breadth of diversity and the reach. The huge parts of different parts of our communities that have, come on board and developed with us work for and by their communities. That really has meant that, I know it's an old line, there's something for everyone, but I really think that there is, and there's hopefully multiple somethings for everyone.
Yeah, and for so many people, it's the time of year, it's the festival where they get to connect with the community. Yeah. So you're really breaking down a lot of isolation. A lot of people say, I only really mingle with folks, face-to-face these days at Midsummer.
Well, I think that's really great, because I think one of the things that we all found sort of during COVID and coming out of that is how important it is that we do physically connect. It's great that we can connect in other ways and across great distances, but that coming together and making spaces and places meaningful for us is really, really important. I think that the Midsummer has everything from those big events where, there's over 100,000 people, but there's also lots of really small intimate gatherings where people might come from an event from a specific part of the community and still gather together, but in a way that, everyone is welcome. And in today's climate, I think it's really, really important that we have those times where everybody can feel like they can come together across all ages, all cultures, all faiths.
What's the biggest challenge facing Midsummer? Is it the rise of the far right, or is it something else?
That's certainly big. That's a big challenge for all of our communities, and we certainly are seeing the impacts of that. There's no doubt about that. And we see that even in terms of, the impacts of, from external groups and corporates, that the conservative element is increasing. But also, it's just the practicality of cost. A lot of festivals have been closing around the country, particularly music festivals. I read an article last week that was saying that, other festivals will close over the next decade. And the reality is that funding for our events just isn't keeping pace with costs. And so that is a really big challenge. It is becoming harder and harder to just afford to keep going. But we love what we do and we're really committed, and there's a lot of support out there that hopefully can help us be around for a very, very long time.
Police have announced they're not marching at Pride March this year. You must be relieved there's a resolution to this issue, which has really been kind of, chipping away for quite a few years now. I mean, I remember in about the year 2000, 2001, it was an issue. So it's been bubbling away for a long time. You must be relieved there is a resolution.
It's one of those issues that, times change. And there's still a lot of people who contact us saying that they do want the police to march. We've been sort of consulting with a whole range of stakeholders for 2 years. And you're right, it has been bubbling around for a long time, but, it had become more and more of an issue for us and to be able to hold a safe event. We met sort of monthly with a whole lot of different groups for that sort of 18 months to 2 year period, and arrived last year. So actually this year is no different to the event that we held in 2025, where we came up with a trauma-informed approach for a couple of years for a trial. And as part of that, it's about making the event a safe and inclusive for everybody. And that seems to have been reviewed very positively by large parts of the community. And unfortunately, the Victorian Police have chosen not to be able to abide by the guidelines of the event this year, which means that they're not participating. But there'll be a lot of groups who will be part of the march, and a lot of community groups, a lot of diversity groups, and there will still be a lot of workplaces that will be marching in Pride this year. And we're very much looking forward to a very exciting and inclusive event.
So did police say that they can't march because of that trauma-led approach that you were using, and therefore that created some circumstances where they felt that they couldn't?
Yeah, look, I'll leave it to them to answer around their rationale, but certainly the response that we got, we had two conditions that have been placed for the 25 and the 26th event. And one of those is that we ask all groups to not march in full corporate uniforms. So that doesn't mean people can't use elements of their corporate identity. If marching in a workplace is important to them from a point of view of we spend a lot of time in a workplace, and you, if you want to make those workplaces a safe and celebratory, I can understand that people want to, at times, that's where they want to show pride. But there's a lot of people, you know, we have refugees in our communities who march. We have people who have experienced trauma in their lives. So sometimes formal uniforms, you know, in their entirety can be really quite triggering. So that was one of the things that we asked people not to do. The flip side and the great side of that is we had groups last year, including one of the emergency services groups, who sort of said, well, look, the orange part of our uniform is really important. We want people to see that orange and recognise who we are and that we are supportive of our communities. And we want that to be a positive for them. And so we sort of said, look, we're not saying you can't wear that, but, you know, wear something celebratory on top. No, because, I mean, it isn't. It's not a military-style march. It is very much a fun event. We actually want people to dress up and have a good time and look like they're having a good time. And so it's been embraced by a lot of people. And the other is, you know, which I don't think anyone would really have a problem with, is that we ask, obviously, people to be unarmed, to not carry any weapons in a pride march. And unfortunately, a part of that is part of the formal uniform of the police. So, look, I'll leave it to them to explain exactly why they chose not to march, but they didn't feel that under those two conditions that they were able to participate at this time.
So weapons were a sticking point.
I'm going to leave that because, you know, they just told us they couldn't march under the guidelines as they are. And those guidelines are free, like, for everybody. We've been communicating them broadly for a number of years, and we expect that everyone equally will participate meeting those guidelines.
In the old days, Pride March was run by a collective and Midsummer took it over because the collective collapsed, if you like. And this debate has been pretty toxic at times. Has there ever been a point where the board just thought, gee, it's just too much, we'll give it back to a collective to run? Did you ever consider that?
No. I'll explain. Look, I'll certainly say it's not been an easy time sometimes. And I won't say that the board and everyone has at times not thought, geez, this is difficult. Particularly when you're trying to run an event that is for all parts of our communities. And our communities don't have the same thoughts and desires and wishes. They all want something different. And so we're trying to create an event that's meeting everybody's expectations and needs, and that's almost impossible. But the time that it was handed over, and it was handed over because otherwise the event wasn't going to go ahead. And it's not just financial, although that is a big part of it. Running a Pride March is expensive, and it's become more and more expensive since, so for example, hostile vehicle barriers since the horrific events of Bourke Street a number of years ago now. You actually can't hold a march in a street without quite significant safety things in place, and they're expensive. But also councils and just permits that are required for those types of things, they're actually quite complex to be able to put together the plans and get permits to do these. And so, you know, the capacity to run that no longer is something that a volunteer community group is able to do. And at the time that Pride March Victoria needed to fold and hand it over, they couldn't get insurance, they couldn't get the permits to run the event anymore. And so, you know, it got to a point where it needed to be handed over to an organisation that has some of those professional skills just to be able to make it happen. And I think for us, we see ourselves as the custodians of Pride March. It is still very much a community event. But as custodians, it's important that we enable that event to be able to continue for all of our diverse communities.
Karen, you're a really keen photographer and you've done some extraordinary pictures. I remember one of Dina Curry doing Drag Story Time. It was in black and white, an extraordinary shot. Will any of your photos be in Midsummer this year?
Not in the festival. I think I've got quite enough on. And I always feel a bit odd about, you know, creating my own work within the festival that, you know, I've got artistic charge over. But I do love my photography, and I'll certainly be carrying my camera throughout and taking shots. We have a project called Capturing Courage, which is telling the stories of people in our communities showing courage in their everyday lives. I'll put that away for a couple of months while we deliver the festival, but I'll pick that back up, and that enables us to keep out there sharing the wonderful stories, experiences of our communities all year round.
Well, Karen, it kicks off on the 18th of January. This year's Midsummer Festival goes until the 8th of February. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your candidness and your extraordinary work at Midsummer. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
3CR. In Your Face would like to thank Thorn Harbour Health for their sponsorship of this program. Thorn Harbour Health envisions a future where our LGBTIQ plus communities and people living with HIV are healthy and live safely with dignity and well-being. To find out more, search for Thorn Harbour Health online.